It's time to go in depth with Ask the Chief.
Let's get to the phones. We've got Nancy calling from Northwest. Nancy, you're on with the Chief. Go ahead.
Your chance to ask questions of D.C. Police Chief Kathy Lanier. Now live from the Glass Enclosed Nerve Center, your hosts, Mark Seagraves and Mark Lewis.
To ask a question of the Chief this morning, give us a call at 877-336-1035. That's 877-336-1035. You can email your question at WTOP.com. You can also submit questions on our Facebook page or via Twitter. Use the hashtag AskTheChief. Now, WTOP's Mark Seagraves.
Chief, we appreciate you coming in. Thanks very much. Let's get right to it. There's been a lot of discussion lately about photo enforcement. There's been some, I don't know if they're hearings, task force, roundtables down at City
All
Hall.
All of the above.
All of the above down at City Hall. And there's a lot to talk about. Let's talk about first the amount of the fines. And I know, and I think everybody knows, that you don't decide the fines. But that's really the big conversation that's going on with City Council members Che and Wells and their task force that you have a presence on. And one of the questions that was asked is, is there evidence that shows that a higher fine, and D.C. has just about the highest photo enforcement fines in the nation, do higher fines equal safer streets?
Well, I can't say, you know, for a fact that, you know, the amount of the fine makes a difference. I know that the enforcement makes a difference. I think that the paying a fine and having that enforcement is, we've demonstrated over and over in the district that it's had a tremendous impact on traffic fatalities.
And tell us, because your staff presented a PowerPoint presentation that had a pretty graphic
yes,
on this, showing the traffic fatalities from 2001, when cameras first came on the scene in D.C., to date. And what do those numbers show
so
us?
So from 2001 to 2011, we saw about a 50% reduction. And just from last year to this year, we're already down 60%. So in 2001, we had 72 traffic fatalities in the city. As of today, we have 11.
And
so that's a dramatic drop-off.
And what role does speed play in those deaths now?
So the favorite statistic I like to use is where speed isn't a factor in fatalities is if a pedestrian, adult pedestrian, is struck by a vehicle traveling 30 miles an hour or less, they have an 80% chance of survival. If they're struck by a vehicle that's traveling more than 30 miles an hour, they have an 80% chance of not surviving. So that in itself speaks volumes for collision data, you know, and the lethality of those crashes.
And you were very candid with your first answer that there really doesn't seem to be data that shows whether or not the amount of the fine has an impact on the safety, just that the fact
yeah,
that the presence of the cameras.
There's no way to really know that. I think the data does show that, you know, the deterrent is that there is a penalty. So the fine is a deterrent. The amount of the fine, I don't know how much difference that makes.
D.C. Police Chief Kathy Lanier is here taking your calls, emails, tweets, Facebook questions on Ask the Chief. More with the Chief right after this.
It's Ask the Chief with D.C. Police Chief Kathy Lanier. Now back to your host, WTOP's Mark Seagraves and Mark Lewis.
Here's the phone number to call, 877-336-1035. If you have a question for the Chief, 877-336-1035. Email us by going to WTOP.com or submit questions via Twitter. Use the hashtag AskTheChief.
And Chief, let's stay on this as far as the fines. And again, we know that you don't set the fines. But when your staff was at the task force, they did say that in 2010, this is when the fines under the Fenty administration, the fines and fees in the city went up dramatically. And they said that the department did make recommendations as to what the fines should be. They never said what those recommendations were. Can you tell us what you recommended at the time?
Yeah, I remember going through that. What the goal was back then was to bring our fines, our traffic fines, in line with Maryland and Virginia, because we were the lowest across the board in all of the categories. So it wasn't to separate out photo enforcement versus regular enforcement. It was to bring our fines as a whole up to par with everybody else in the region. There was never really any discussion about whether we're going to have different fines for photo enforcement versus regular enforcement. Some jurisdictions do, some don't. So it really was just about getting us more in line with everybody else.
So the 250 max, that's in line with what your recommendations were?
Yes.
And you had a woman who, I believe her name is Ms. Sutter, who
yes,
is in charge of this program. And I believe we have a caller who has a question about exactly what she does. Sid, you're in Northeast, and you are on with the Chief.
Good morning. Actually, my question is regarding the surveillance cameras.
Go ahead.
Okay, thank you.
Sure.
There's one that was recently placed near my home in Northeast. It had a globe on the bottom, a pointed camera, a box with a bunch of antennas. And my question is exactly, what does this do? And is there any zoning requirement, or how do you decide where to place what you place? I know that someone had damaged it, but how are they placed, and what do they actually do, the surveillance camera arrays?
So if it's a photo enforcement camera you're referring to, and I believe it is, those sounds like one of the mobile units or the stationary units we put out recently. The
No.
placement determination is based on three main factors: crash data. So we look at total number of crashes in the area, and in particularly crashes that are speed related. We look at fatality or injury data tied to those crashes in the area, and then requests from communities. Currently, I think I have 60 requests pending from community members all across the city asking and waiting for photo enforcement in their area.
If this is a surveillance camera, because we've seen this in Georgetown recently, where private citizens...
That doesn't sound like any camera.
But what is the policy there? If a private citizen or a business or a citizens group like in Georgetown decide, hey, we want to do our own surveillance of our neighborhood, mm-hmm. can they do that? Can they just start putting up cameras mm-hmm. and recording what's going on?
So as long as the camera's attached to their property, yes. They can. I mean, it's video is in public space is not restricted. Now, if they want to allow us access to their footage, and typically we do find a lot of private security cameras around the city that we will utilize if we need to gather evidence after a crime. But yeah, they're allowed to put it up in their own, as long as it's attached to their own property.
Let's get back into photo enforcement. And one of the things that you had talked about before on this show, that it's technology that's now available, but during this task force, your staff said that it's actually going to become a reality very soon. Are photo enforcement of things other than red light and speeding, and the first one to come up will be stop signs. Mm-hmm. First, can you tell us when and where we'll see stop sign camera enforcement?
Well, we're going to follow the same policies we've always followed. So it'll be probably around the end of the year, so sometime between now and December, probably closer to the end of the year. We'll notify the public of, you know, where they're going to be placed. We'll, once they're placed, we'll give a 30-day warning period. So if you do pass the stop sign the first 30 days, you'll get a warning ticket in the mail. And then after that, it will go live with live fines. So, you know, well, those probably will be in about 8 to 10 different intersections. And we can move them around based, again, on crash data and requests from the community.
Now, at first, I keep referring to them as your staff because I honestly don't remember their names. But the people who actually operate this division in your office, the photo enforcement, said that they thought they would primarily go around schools. Is that the plan?
Yes, yes. You know, 40% of our more serious crashes are running controlled intersections to include stop signs. So that's a really a big deal.
And I think most of us now kind of have it in our DNA how these photo enforcement works when it comes to red lights and speeding. I think there's a big question about how it works at a stop sign, which mm-hmm. can be somewhat ambivalent depending on, I guess it's all in the eyes of the beholder, but whether or not you come to a complete stop. So how does this technology work?
So the technology works so that it's set up to monitor an intersection and across the stop line. So that you're supposed to, when you come to a stop sign and controlled intersection, you're supposed to stop at the stop line. So it will monitor that and detect vehicles that approach that intersection that do not come to a stop and pass through that intersection. Now, once that is captured, that video, it's digital video that's captured, it's reviewed by three different individuals in the police department, including a police officer, to validate whether, in fact, it was a rolling, you know, running through the stop sign. So then the fine will be issued by DMV from there.
And then the next wave of technology allows you to ticket for blocking the box, which we hear on WTOP from commuters.
That this every time I'm on the show, we get callers about that.
So when can we see that? When can we expect to see those cameras?
That'll be in the next wave, so that'll be sometime next year.
And then the third leg of this is pedestrian enforcement and crosswalks yielding to pedestrians. When would we see that?
That'll be also sometime next year. But that technology works the same as the stop sign enforcement.
And so how many of these cameras, because we've started, we just, another 11 speed cameras just went live. Well, they were up, but they were issuing warnings, right? They just
still
started issuing fines. How many more cameras, photo enforcement, red light, speed, stop sign? Give us some numbers. Where are we headed?
Well, let me put things in perspective first. Everybody always refers to us as having saturated the city in red light cameras and photo enforcement. We have currently 47 red light enforcement cameras in a city that has 1,500 traffic signals. That's not, I mean, just a real perspective for saturation. We have 25 fixed and 21 mobile speed enforcement units, and that's to cover 1,100 miles of public roadway. So, you know, the next two phases, the number of cameras will be dependent upon when the contract goes out and what the pricing is. But, you know, we're looking at probably 8 to 10 for each phase.
One of the things that your the people who run your operation,
Lisa,
one of the things Lisa testified to was that, and she acknowledges that there is a delay in getting from the date that you incur either the warning or the ticket and the date that that ticket shows up in your mail. And she explained that part of it is, you just said, the review process, mm-hmm. that there are multiple eyes that watch it before it's sent out. But she also acknowledged that it's possible that you could get some warnings and then get tickets, and all of them can start showing up in the mail about the same time. So the warning is not really a warning if it doesn't come before the actual tickets. What are you doing to address that problem?
Well, that's under DMV, and I know you've had some discussions with Lucinda, but you know, that rarely happens. It does happen. It's not often that it happens, and the U.S. Postal Service does a great job on getting mail out. It's not a matter. We've had a couple of cases where people said they didn't get a letter at all, and it was never returned back to DMV. So, again, it's extremely unusual when that happens, but it does happen occasionally.
D.C. Police Chief Kathy Lanier is here for the rest of the hour, taking your calls via email, tweets, Facebook, or the phone here on Ask the Chief. More right.
WTOP goes in depth with Ask the Chief and D.C. Police Chief Kathy Lanier. Back to your host, Mark C. Graves and Mark Lewis.
Here's the phone number, 877-336-1035, so you can ask the Chief, 877-336-1035. You can email us by going to WTOP.com, submit questions on our Facebook page, or via Twitter, use the hashtag AskTheChief.
And let's get right to the calls. Gary, you're on with Chief Lanier. Go ahead.
Yes, good morning, Chief. Thank you for taking my call.
Hi, Gary.
Hi. Since we're on that subject, my question is we have all these things going into effect about the drivers in the box and stop signs and all. How about the pedestrians that, like in Georgetown, Water Street, the bicyclists, they don't stop for stop signs, they don't stop for lights, they just walk out in front of you, and the sign says to yield to the pedestrians with in the crosswalk.
Yeah, that's
so
great.
What would the definition be for that?
Well, first of all, every time we do this show and we have a discussion about enforcement, we get calls in from bicyclists, pedestrians, and motorists. There's a big three-way debate here. We do enforcement for all three. So last year we wrote about 500 tickets for pedestrian violations, and that's everything from walking against a red light to walking to create a hazard or leaving the curb in an unsafe manner. So we do enforcement of that.
So those are tickets issued to pedestrians.
To pedestrians. And then we issued about 3,000 tickets to bicyclists for bicycle violations. So we try and balance that, you know, safety on the roadways to make sure that everybody's kind of doing their part. And I know exactly what you're talking about. And my kind of pet peeve is people walking while they're looking at their handheld device and, you know, walking right out in the street and not paying attention to where they're walking.
Do the bicycle and pedestrian tickets get paid? I mean, I know when you issue a ticket to a driver, you have a driver's license and a license plate. What is your recourse? Do you get that kind of information?
You know, I don't know how many of them get paid. I mean, I'm sure I could find out, but
because we know from the report that the littering tickets, most of those don't get paid.
Correct. I've not heard that we had a problem with getting paid, but I could find out.
And let's ask, because Gary mentioned this in his question, the idea of when do you actually, as a driver, when are you required to yield to pedestrian? Only when they're in a crosswalk?
Well, you should always yield to pedestrian. I mean, you have to yield to pedestrian. But if a pedestrian is not in a crosswalk and a pedestrian is violating the crosswalk and there's a collision, the pedestrian could be cited for that. So,
but could a driver get a ticket for not yielding to a pedestrian who's crossing
not,
in the middle
no,
of the block?
No.
They're not going to get a ticket
for
that.
No, but we do say that you should yield if you're in a motor vehicle and a pedestrian.
And then while we're on this topic, because it's a hot topic, so let's get through it. Bicycles, and what are the rights for bicyclists? Do they? Because Maryland just put up some new signs that say bikes share full lane. And so I think there's some question between bicyclists and driver as to, do cyclists have to stay to the curb, to the right? Do they have to allow cars to get by? Or are bicyclists entitled to the full lane?
Yeah. All right, so let me get into the bike issue, because this is a huge issue and there's a lot of regulations around bikes, motor scooters, motorcycles. They're all very very different. But no, they do not. Even if there is a designated bike lane, and there are 56 bike lane areas in the city, they do not have to stay in the bike lane. They can travel on the roadway. They're restricted to no more than two riding abreast from the curb. They have to follow the same rules, regulations as motor vehicles. They have to come to a complete stop at a stop sign and controlled intersections.
Can they take up the entire lane, or are they required to stay as close to the curb?
They can travel on any part of the lane or the roadway that they, I mean, they're entitled to the entire lane and roadway. And they're not restricted to the curb lane or a bike lane.
So in a three-lane road, they could be in the center lane?
They can be.
Okay. What about pedicabs? Do they fall, are they bicycles?
Same rules as a bicycle, with the exception of they have to have, passengers have to be seat belted in, they have to have the head and tail lights, and they can't travel on roadways where the speed is greater than 30 miles an hour.
Now, scooters, and you have a lovely little picture thing of what all the different scooters look like, but there's been some questions recently about which scooters have to have a license plate and have to have a helmet, and which are exempt from that, and which can park on sidewalks, and which can't park on sidewalks. And Mary Che, council member from Ward 3, has said she wants to have some clarifying legislation here. Is there confusion?
I mean, that's the reason I carry this chart, and this is up on our website for people to look. And it's so there's motorcycles, motorized bicycles, which would be scooters, and then there's all-terrain vehicles, dirt bikes, low-speed vehicles, and then personal mobility devices. Different rules for each. So for motorized bicycles, which would be a scooter, this is less than 50 cc's in terms of engine capacity. You have to have inspection. You have to have emissions every 2 years. You have to have a driver's permit, but you don't need a motorcycle endorsement. You must have insurance. You do not have to have a helmet, and you're not permitted on the sidewalk.
So it seems like...
And a scooter is allowed to ride in the bike lanes, but a motorcycle is not.
It seems like if the chief of police has to carry a multi-page cheat sheet with pictures and graphs, that there is some confusion here.
I think it's just there's so many different types of modes of transportation now. I mean, pedicabs and, you know, the personal mobility devices, and then differences between scooters and you know, motorcycles. So I think it's just a matter of using, you know, whatever it is you're specifically trying to use as your mode of transportation, look and see what the rules are for you. They're not that complicated if you're not trying to know them all.
Last 30 seconds on this, Segways. Are they allowed on the sidewalks? What are they considered?
They are allowed on the sidewalks outside of the Central Business District, and they have to yield to pedestrians on the sidewalk.
And Central Business District is downtown K Street, the National Mall, that area.
Yes.
And you see Segways on the sidewalks all the time, particularly on the mall.
They're not supposed to be.
Is that your jurisdiction if they're on the mall sidewalks, or is that a park police?
Park police.
That's park police. Are people getting ticketed for that? Have you talked to the Segway operators, these tour groups that travel around in packs?
We spent a lot of time with those groups when they first started. We worked on, you know, all the regulations that are in place now. We worked with them. They cooperated with us in working on, you know, where they're going to travel and how they're going to travel. I haven't seen them on the sidewalks down there, not since this, you know, first started 2 or 3 years ago.
D.C. Police Chief Kathy Lanier taking your questions for the rest of the hour.
It's Ask the Chief with D.C. Police Chief Kathy Lanier. Now back to your host, WTOP's Mark Seagraves and Mark Lewis.
Here's the number to call if you want to speak with the chief, 877-336-1035. That's 877-336-1035. You can email a question by going to WTOP.com. You can also submit questions via our Facebook page or on Twitter. Use the hashtag AskTheChief.
Chief, there's been a couple of high-profile attacks on Capitol Hill near Eastern Market, pretty violent attacks. What can you tell us about the investigation into these, I guess, that are now two incidents?
So the issue really is, I mean, the robbery issue has been a huge issue for us, you know, all year long. And the vast majority of these robberies, I'd say 80% or more, the victim has a cell phone or some sort of device in their hand, and the suspect will snatch it and run away. So there's no assault involved. The disturbing part about these two cases, in both cases, the victims were assaulted seemingly unnecessarily to take property. So in both cases, they're in the same area, 4 or 5 blocks apart. So obviously we're looking to see if there's some connection between these two incidents, both involved an assault, which is not common, not typical for these type of robberies. Both happened late in the evening, early morning hours, very close in proximity. So we did release a video of a car that we were asking for information on from the first incident. The first incident happened on the 18th of August. And that was, you know, very well publicized. We put the video out. We got a lot of information. A lot of tips came in, mostly about the type of car and things like that. We don't have anything like that in this second case. So I know there's been some talk about a witness saying there was a car involved. The victim doesn't know if there was a car involved. So there's still a lot of work to do. But I can tell you that, you know, with these type of robberies, when we catch the folks involved in these robberies, we're going to go after them hard. I mean, I think to steal other people's property is one thing. But to unnecessarily assault, and assault so severely the victim, we're really going to go after them.
And when you say unnecessarily, it sounds like the victims were cooperating, willing to hand over.
Well, as I said, you know, in most of these cases, and I think, you know, the last victim, you know, says he was on his phone. So in most of these cases, the phone is snatched out of a person's hand and then they keep on going. There's really no reason to assault the victim in this case. So we're even discussing with our partners, is there something we need to look at in terms of the law so that if there is a robbery where a person is injured, we enhance those penalties, because it doesn't make any sense.
Let's get to another caller. We have Julio is calling from Southwest. You're on with the chief.
Hey, good morning, chief. How are you today?
Good morning, Julio. I'm great.
Hey, chief, got a quick question for you. One, I want to say you're doing a great job for our city. We love you for it. And one quick question. You know, since the Nationals are headed to the postseason, and, you know, we all want the Nationals to go all the way, do you have a plan for all the additional security needed if we go, like, to the NLDS and a World Series and maybe a parade?
Oh, we sure do.
Are you planning for the victory parade already?
We've already got that all sealed up. We know we're going. We're real happy with the Nationals. We've been working with Major League Baseball, with the Lerner family, and plans already in place for all of those victory celebrations, the playoffs, everything that we need to have in place, because it's going to be a big celebration for us here in Washington. I mentioned the other day, I think the last time was in the 60s, 1969, when Washington, D.C. was in position to go with our team to the World Series. So we are all excited.
So who pays for this additional security that we needed around the stadium and elsewhere?
Well, so for specific events around the stadium, it'd be like most large special events around events will ask for reimbursable detail. So that'll be paid for by the Nationals.
And they've agreed to that? Because, you know, there's the dispute over Metro pain.
We're still working on what the finalized plan is going to be and what it's going to cost. But once we get that done, you know, we'll work with the Lerner family to get that, you know, finalized. But there's still a few things we got to plug in. But in addition to that, there's a lot of things that I got to do that's just part of policing the city when you have a large, you know, event like this. We're going to have a lot of people in a lot of areas around the city. It's not just going to be the stadium. So there's going to be high demand for us all over. So the larger plan is going to encompass much more than just the stadium.
And what can people expect as far as security getting in and out of the stadium? Would that be ramped up?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the big thing is I think there's going to be a lot of pedestrian traffic. You know, it's already, if you're watching the popularity of the games this year, the stadium is, you know, getting filled almost to capacity for most of the games. And so getting traffic in and out, coordinating pedestrians, getting them in and out, and then some of the celebrations that'll be in the street, you'll see a lot more police.
And in your conversations, does Metro come up? I know you don't run Metro, but you must. There must be a safety component involved in having Metro operating as long as there are people leaving the stadium.
We would like to have Metro operating when they leave the stadium. Certainly, for those who take Metro in, we'd like them to be able to take Metro out, because it just puts a lot of pedestrians out in the community.
And are there going to be parking restrictions that are different than they are now around the stadium? Will anything change as far as getting to and from the stadium for people in their cars, traffic patterns, parking?
Well, we'll release all that information as we get closer, but I think depending on the types of events, or, you know, we're looking at possibly some events out in the roadways, you know, and blocking off some areas and doing some street events. So if that happens, yes, there'll be some restrictions and changes in parking and travel. We'll make sure all that is publicized and available on our website as well, so people can get in and get out without having to worry about confusion.
D.C. Police Chief Kathy Lanier here for Ask the Chief. More right after this.
WTOP goes in depth with Ask the Chief and D.C. Police Chief Kathy Lanier. Back to your hosts, Mark C. Graves and Mark Lewis.
If you have a question for the Chief, now is the time to get in. Phone lines are open at 877-336-1035. That's 877-336-1035. You can email questions at WTOP.com. You can also submit questions on Twitter. Use the hashtag AskTheChief.
Chief, some issues that have been in the news recently with your department. Some officers recently shot a man with a knife. There were some conflicting reports as to whether the man was actually threatening the police at the time, and I'm certain you can tell us whether that's under investigation right now. But one of the questions it raised was whether or not police MPD officers have tasers, have an option other than lethal force at their disposal. What can you tell us about that?
Well, we do have less lethal options. Every officer is issued two other less lethal options. We have OC spray, and we also have an ASP, and even all the way up to the command level, they require to carry at least one less lethal option. The problem with dealing with an armed person that's armed with a knife, and there's been a lot of studies done on the difficulties in dealing with a person armed with a knife, is that, you know, they at 21 feet they can inflict a lethal injury to an officer in just a matter of seconds. So it's very difficult to deal with an armed person dealing with a knife. So tasers, you know, there's some police departments have them, some don't. We've looked at it, we've evaluated it. We're considering issuing them to our SWAT team or ERT, but I'm not a big fan of having tasers out in the field. There's still been some issues with tasers. There has been some deaths from tasers. So that's one of the reasons these things are called less lethal and not non-lethal, because there's still potential for death.
So it's not an issue of you just don't have the money for tasers.
No, it's not. It's not that. It's just, you know, you hope that your less lethal option is just that is not fatal. But I think with taser, and particularly, we've seen deaths around the country, and I'm not a big fan of putting them out there in the, across the department yet.
You recently lost one of your officers, Officer Oscar Pedroza, who had been on the force, I think, for about 7 years. Mm-hmm. What can you tell us about Officer Pedroza?
He actually, he was involved in an incident off duty back in 2007. He intervened in a fight. Actually, he and a security guard. And during the course of trying to break up the fight, he was stabbed. In fact, we awarded him a commendation for that. He and the security guard who actually chased down and apprehended the suspect in that case. So, you know, well known to all of us, he is a hardworking police officer. He's been back to work out on the street doing his job. We don't know the cause of death yet. So we are waiting to find out if there's a potential that somehow complications from the stabbing in 2007 led to his death or not. So
if that were the case, it would be a line of duty death.
It would be.
And so obviously the widow and his children, I think he has had four children who survive him, would be entitled to benefits. But it also raises questions about the suspect who was caught, tried, convicted, served his time for the stabbing. If this is now ruled a line of duty death, that would be a homicide, correct?
Correct.
What happens to that suspect?
You know, I would defer to the U.S. Attorney's Office, but I believe if that was the case, they would go after him for prosecution.
So you can rearrest and then charge him?
If the condition of the victim changes, yes.
We had a tweet from Charlotte asking about why they're seeing so many D.C. police officers at the Democratic National Convention.
Well, you know my answer to that, Mark. Everybody wants the best police department, you know, in the country there to help them out when there's a big event. So they ask for our help. We have 60 officers we deployed down there. They have a fantastic chief and a fantastic police department.
The Charlotte chief.
Yes.
My former boss.
Yes.
The question, I guess, is, one, taking 60 officers off of duty here, does that hurt your deployment here? Does that in any way compromise safety in Washington, D.C.?
So, I mean, you know, we do it, you know, several times a year. We borrow officers from our partners around the region and, you know, at least during inauguration and some other large events, we borrow officers from all over the country to help us with large events. So it is completely reimbursed by the agency who make the request. So this is all being paid for by Charlotte. And this is mutual aid at its finest. We have to help each other out with these types of events. And it's good for us. also to have that experience with our team. So many of them were taken from specialized units, so it's had no impact on our deployments.
And you say Charlotte's going to reimburse. We've been looking at how much just a hamburger in Charlotte costs. Down there. I mean, so these
really
guys,
you're looking at hamburgers
well,
in Charlotte?
I've got people who are staff who's looking at it for me. But so these guys are fully compensated, fully reimbursed, their meals, their lodging, all of this is taken care of, not costing the officers or the DC taxpayers.
Doesn't cost us anything. And I have to check into the cost of the hamburger. That could be troublesome.
Let me ask you, you talk about during the inauguration, it works the opposite. You make the call out to departments. We have an inauguration coming up. Obviously, you had the largest gathering of humanity in the history of the United States a few years ago that went without incident. You must be planning for this inauguration already.
Yeah, we started about 18 months out. So we started in the last half of last year. So planning is well underway. There's dozens of committees and a lot of work being done, and we're going to bring in probably around 2,500 officers from outside.
Are you expecting crowds to equal the size of the crowds for President Obama's inauguration?
You know, after last time, everything else is a walk in the park. I don't think we'll have the, you know, roughly 2 million people show up again this time. It was such a, you know, historical event last time. But, you know, I think we're prepared for whatever we get.
Can you update us on breathalyzers? This has been an issue now, at least going
forever.
On forever. that your department does not have the capacity to issue breathalyzer tests in the field yet. There's been some movement on that. How much closer is your department to having breathalyzers?
I'm always reluctant to say because it just seems like it's a moving target. But there was a lot of work to be done, and I will say when it does go back online, it's going to be, you know, the best in the country. It'll be housed. The whole program will be housed out of the Office of the Chief Medical Examiner. They have been working with a vendor and the software and getting everything done. We're very, very, very close, Mark, to having a fully implemented program. But I'm not going to commit myself to
this year.
The goal is to have it before the end of this year.
And in the meantime, are people being charged with DUI? Is this impacting the safety? And is it just open season in the district?
No. You got to remember that in most alcohol-related arrests, the person is already under arrest, and there's for behaviors or observed behaviors before the breathalyzer even comes into the picture, and we have other options.
D.C. Police Chief Kathy Lanier here taking your calls on Ask the Chief.
It's Ask the Chief with D.C. Police Chief Kathy Lanier. Now back to your host, WTOP's Mark Seagraves and Mark Lewis.
Final minutes to get your question in at 877-336-1035. That's 877-336-1035.
Chief, I spoke to you about this a while ago, and one of my sons crossing a street was on his bike in a crosswalk, was hit by a car. The officer who responded was so great to my kids and to me, calling me to make sure I knew that my kids were safe and make sure that my kids got home safely. I really just, and I told him and I told you how much my family appreciated that. My question is, though, the next morning we woke up at 8 o'clock and our phone was ringing with lawyers who were calling, personal injury lawyers who had clearly gotten a hold of the police report that we'd had this accident that was clearly the fault of a driver who ran a stop sign. And the calls did not stop for 2 days, and the letters persisted for another week. What is the policy for the department of handing over this kind of information to lawyers? I guess this is a routine thing for them.
Well, you know, it's so ironic because there was policies and regulations put in place to try and stop that and control that. So you have to come in and you have to show an ID to get a copy of the report. It's been in effect, we're not sure how some of these reports are getting out.
And I know as a reporter, I want access, and I often access those same reports, but it's been my experience that I've had to tell them about a specific event, have a date, time, and location, and then I can ask.
Right.
I can't just go trolling.
I know. And it's very annoying. And what's ironic about it is it's not happening in the other jurisdictions right around us. To the same magnitude that it's happening here. So I know that we, you know, have sat down with the public safety chairman to talk about different rules and legislation.
So are they not supposed to be having access to this?
They're not. They're not. I mean, they're supposed to come in and show an identification. You know, they're not supposed to have what they do, I think, is they have runners that come through and go to the stations. But we're not even sure that's how they're getting the information, because it seems like the information gets out, like in your case, almost as soon as the police report is complete. So it's a very complicated.
It seemed like a pretty quick turnaround.
It
to
really
me.
Does. And
are they breaking the law? Are the lawyers, are these runners breaking the law, or is there someone in the department?
I can't say how they're getting them, so I'm not really sure. Now, our department, we do check the rosters to make sure that the officers in the stations are doing what they're supposed to do and releasing the reports and having people sign for it. I can't say. I just know that what we put in place is not effective.
And again, I can't say enough about the officer who handled this and took care of my kids. It's much appreciated by us. Let me ask you about another incident that happened a few months ago, and that was you had an officer who made some remarks about the First Lady mm-hmm. that were considered to be threatening. There was reports that several officers may be disciplined. Update us on this.
So I just found out over the weekend that there has been a declination issued now, so they're not going to prosecute criminally. So now the administrative investigation will go forward. So kind of the ball's in our court now for us to do the
administrative. What does that mean, that there's been a declaration or—
So everybody understands the process. Secret Service did the initial, as soon as this incident was reported, the Secret Service kind of did two separate things. One, they did a threat assessment to determine was there really a valid threat on the First Lady. And they also, we also worked with them to prepare and submit what we did have from preliminary investigation, whether this would be prosecutable. So we sent up for a review, and they have now declined to prosecute and sent back. So now it's an administrative investigation, and our IAD is handling that.
And what is the status of the officer or officers involved?
The officer is on non-contact, but he is working.
So there's just one officer who's being looked at, because there are reports that the discipline may extend beyond just one officer.
There's just one officer right now that's on non-contact.
Let me ask you about home invasions. There have been some reports about home invasions. This is a very scary thing, obviously, for the victims and then the neighbors. What can you tell us about this?
We had two incidents over in Southeast. One, there was a gentleman who was doing construction inside of a home. He had the door propped open. He had been working in the home for several days. I think, with the folks who went in there and robbed him of his tools, went in through the propped open door. And then we had another case where the door was unlocked. So persons entered through an unlocked door. And the last case really was a group of individuals who were sitting on a front porch. And these are robberies now. So robberies that, in that last case, they moved indoors, took the people indoors and did a robbery inside of the home. So
my colleague Neil Augustine here at WTOP reported on a gentleman who was stopped by your officers. His phone was confiscated, and he was taking pictures of the officers performing their duty. When the phone was returned, the man says that the memory card inside the phone was gone. He's now filed legal action against the department. I know I can tell that you're restricted in some way, but what can you tell us about this incident? And then the overall, what are people's rights, the public? Mm. Are they allowed to photograph officers?
Well, we've had a policy in place for a very long time that makes clear what you can and can't do in terms of confiscating cameras and all of that. It's been around for a long time. So that, the allegation that I'm aware of, if the allegation is correct, and if it's true, then the officers violated policy that's been in place for a very long time. As well as procedures, seizing people's property. So it's under investigation right now. We have to wait until the investigation is complete to determine exactly what happened. It was just ironic that it came, a day after I issued an updated order and the updated order really was just to try and give scenario-based, much more clear description to police officers on what to do.
But as a citizen, as a journalist, as just anybody walking down the street, if I want to take a picture with my phone or any other camera of your officers in the line of duty, I'm well within my rights to
do
that.
Yes, you are. Yes, you are.
D.C. Police Chief Kathy Lanier, thank you very much for coming. We very much appreciate it.